Hey, dude, this dog like stinks, man.
Okay, groomer, do something about it, man.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff. Hey, all you pet stylists. You found the Groom Pod. Welcome to our virtual salon. My name is Susie, and I'm your host. I'm a mobile groomer from Seattle, Washington, and anyone who knows me will tell you I love to talk, especially about my job. One of my favorite people to talk to is my friend and mentor and co-star of the show, Miss Barbara Bird. Hi, Barbara.
Oh, hi, Susie. Hey, I'm so glad I get to talk. I live alone. What do I do? I talk to the dog. I don't answer the phone. I text. It's just like fun being able to talk.
Yay.
So what are we going to talk about on this fine spring day?
Well, you're going to tell us in your classroom segment why shampoo might change color. But the most important part is, okay, well, for me, is the behavior game. We're going to play a behavior game. This podcast is brought to you by our kind sponsors, Best Shot, Show Season, Precision Sharp, Groomore, and Stazco. And you guys, if you'd like to support us, especially Barbara, looks like she's going to be moving pretty quick here.
Woo-hoo!
There's a button on our website, thegroompod.com, and you can click on that and support Barbara. There's another one that is to support the show, and that's our Patreon subscription plan, and that button is on there as well. So like I said, we're going to talk about why color changes in shampoo and the behavior recognition game. Barbara.
Hey.
What's new this week is brought to you by Groomore Software. If you haven't found Groomore, you're missing out. Groomore is an all-in-one software solution for your grooming business. Whether you are a solo mobile groomer or manage several shops, Groomore has everything you need. 24-hour online booking and forms, routing, credit card processing, reminders, Google Calendar and QuickBooks integration, and so much more. And the best customer service anywhere. Shop mobile or house call, Groomore has you covered. And they're giving us a free month. Just enter GroomPod22 in the coupon code. I've been shopping, Barbara.
Oh, yeah?
I went on to AliExpress to get my husband a new vacuum.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, he's an obsessive vacuumer and he has destroyed his little stick vacuum. So I was on there looking for a new vacuum and I stumbled across some shears that looked like they were the same as the little aluminum-handled lightweight ones.
Right.
Turned out they aren't the same. They're not quite the same. But they're still kind of good shears, not something I would generally reach for. They're no Precision Sharp. They're no Evolution shears. These are just kind of cheapy Chinese shears. The total cost for all three pairs was $27 for three pairs of shears.
Son of a gun. See, it's good to have some of those kind of low investment tools around because that's what you reach for when you have a dirty dog or some unexpected poop in the back that you can't wash off or situations that you don't want to use your $225 shears for.
And I was thinking that occasionally some of my clients would like to do some cleanup trimming in between. These would be a great option for them because they're sharp. They're not going to use them all that often. They're just not quite the quality. I bet they don't hold the edge quite as long. But let me tell you, the chunkers are badass. I was surprised at how good the chunkers were. They're a little bit longer than the regular chunkers I use. I use some really tiny chunkers. They're a little bit longer, but they really do erase stuff in the coat. They remove a lot of hair. They're easy to use. The pivot point is good. They're flippers. They're the same on either side, so they work good for my fingers. But as usual, not everything is perfect because I don't really love the straight shears. I mean, they're fine. They're fine, but they're nothing I would reach for first, especially since I've got the Lynx shears. Those Lynx shears, they're making me a better scissorer.
Right on.
I know, and I need all the help I can get.
Most of us do.
Yeah. Well, Me especially. So I did have another pet die this week.
Oh, no.
Yeah, one of my Westies from a two-Westie house. But this dog was ready 4 or 5 months ago. They aren't the kind to help the dog along, so they just let her pass away at home, which I tried to do that with my cat. I can't do that. I absolutely can't do that. I have to put them to sleep when they start to really lose their self. And she had lost herself. She was just wandering around, passed away at home, and they called to let me know. And I was in between appointments, and I pulled up the Pet Perennials website, the one that I got the gift certificate for, and I still had $10 left. And in about 5 minutes, I had sent them a sympathy gift and a card. And I just can't say enough about how easy it was. I didn't have to order flowers and go log in. I'm already logged in. I know what the gifts are, so I could choose something appropriate for the family. And just maybe 10 minutes later at the most, because I was trying to decide what to say on the card, I had the sympathy card done. So I think that's pretty cool. You should check it out. Everybody should check it out.
And it's tax deductible.
And it's personalized. So even though it's not your handwriting, the card is written by hand. But even more importantly, I was able to get the dog's name stamped into the, what did I send? A wind chime. I sent a wind chime. And I was able to get the dog's name engraved into the back of the wind chime. So pretty cool. Otherwise, it's just been a regular grooming week. Nothing broke. Hooray. How about that for a deal?
Yeah, that's a good week.
I ought to give myself I think I will. Give myself, if I can get to the right page on my soundboard, a bell. I'm going to give myself a bell. Because I earned it. Nothing broke. Hooray. And the sun is out, and it's going to be a great day, and I get to spend it with you. So it doesn't get much better than that. Anything exciting going on in your world, perhaps?
Just moving and selling my house.
You get a bell, too.
Oh, thank you. I love my bell. I need more of that. I should get myself my own sound machine and give myself a bell every day.
Yes.
Yay. You got up. Ding. Life is so fun.
I fully agree.
It's just so amazing. That's all I can say about my life. Yeah.
We may end up with a little bit of a short show. Oh, and the Northwest Grooming Show is coming up. So there will be a missed episode in the future. I don't think it's next week, but the week after. So 2 weeks from now,
okay,
there will be a skipped episode. So we'll have a day off.
I don't love our days off. It's kind of good not to have to do a lot of homework. But now that I'm retired, I'm doing my homework in pieces during the week instead of doing everything Sunday morning. It became too much like Sunday morning. Oh, gotta go to work. I don't get paid well enough for that.
It's true.
Yeah. So that's kind of good, and it's giving me a little bit more time to think things through. That's good.
So you were thinking about a relationship we have with groomers and the factories and the distributors, and you gave us some food for us. I don't know who's in my pocket. You gave me a little food for thought this morning. You want to talk a little about that?
Yeah, well, I got high and started thinking about I've been thinking about trust in our industry and how it's gone from sort of like blind trust to lack of trust on the part of groomers. There's been a strange evolution. So it didn't go from blind trust to solid trust. It went from blind trust to distrust, paranoia even.
The internet had a lot to do with that.
Well, the internet had a lot to do with it. And the shift to free from no this, that, and the other thing marketing had a lot to do with that, because that just fires up, distressed.
And then the internet puts hyperspeed on it to pass it around amongst everybody, and then it just...
Over and over.
Yeah, blows up.
Over and over, and then one website just borrows from another website to say, toxic soup, toxic soup. You have hidden toxins. Everybody's starting to get suspicious about, instead of going, oh, whatever's in there is in there, to like, what the fuck is in there? Is it toxic?
You know what else I think, perhaps? The start of it might have been the purchase of iGroom and the perception that the ingredient list had changed.
It does go back a big shift. No, there was already free from marketing prior to COVID. And that actually started it. And these 16 ingredients to avoid lists, that stuff started it. And then COVID hit and the pandemic really upset the supply chain. For decades, groomers had no knowledge whatsoever about the ingredients in shampoos and conditioners. We just didn't know, and frankly, we didn't care. They either worked or they didn't work. We either liked professional products or we swore by people products. The industry just maintained this kind of solid cloak of secrecy around ingredients, and lack of information builds distrust.
Yes, for sure.
There's so many aspects to this. Certainly, the pandemic and the disruption of the supply chain was a big factor in little changes in products and difficulties in getting products to consumers and the whole iGroom. iGroom was just the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, it was the start of the avalanche.
It was really the visible part of what was going on, and they were particularly hit hard by the disruption of the supply chain because they had Asian connections, Chinese sources for ingredients, or what you call basic chemicals that go into making ingredients of their products.
That makes sense.
And they had some of the newest ingredients, and they had some fancy shit in there that then became really hard to get. The whole silicone thing was hard. I don't think we make very much silicone in the United States. I think, see, the supply chain is worldwide. It's a giant global network of small and large companies and suppliers and growers and burning down the trees and planting palm oil trees. You know, there's so many things that go into the supply chain that are beyond our United States control. And the pandemic caught everybody unawares. So they didn't know the pandemic is coming. You better stock up on 2 years of your colorants or whatever. Yeah.
We didn't get any warning at all. It was a surprise. And things started to change, like the bottles, the labels, the pumps, just odd little things that we didn't know why they were changing. And it's true, they just couldn't get the stuff we were used to.
Something as simple as running out of bottle caps can disrupt manufacturing. If you don't have the caps that fit on your bottles, you can't put shit in there to sell. You know, you can't stop the presses, stop the manufacturing line. We can't go on. And on top of that, a lot of our chemicals are made in Texas, Texas is the biggest supplier of U.S.-made chemicals, and they had a giant hurricane thing that hit Texas and then wiped out a bunch of manufacturing of core ingredients.
Wow, I didn't know that. I didn't know the factories were all there.
Yeah, I didn't know either, but they're a huge percent of the whole network down there in Texas. They have the most chemical sales and exports of any state by way far. And I just read up about that yesterday, as a matter of fact. So it's not just China, but it's small nations, big nations. It's Haiti, and you can't get vetiver from Haiti. And vetiver is a very important fragrance, essential oil for fragrances. It's a bottom note. Like, you don't want everything to smell like vanilla bottom. Can't all be sugar cookie. You got to have some kind of woodsy, more masculine vetiver needs to be underneath there. I know that. And I know that. It made us even less trustful when we saw small changes happening. And then we've been kind of told, and I've said it myself, that one of the signs of product contamination is a change in color.
Yes, I would definitely be questioning change in color in my bottle.
But we need to distinguish between having a different color and discoloration.
Hey, on that note, let's take a break and then come back with Beaver's Classroom, where the guru of ingredients is going to share some information about shampoo changing color. Let me tell you about Best Shot's newest addition to the Ultramax Pro line. Ultramax Hair Hold is a flexible hairspray that can be layered on for a stronger hold. Ultramax Hair Hold spray is great, but my favorite new product is called the Max, and I won't groom without it. It's a fragrance-free ultra concentrate conditioner and detangler. It reduces drying time and handles undercoat and tangles like magic. Just a few drops in the final rinse or spray it on and dry it in. Contact your favorite Best Shot distributor or learn more online at bestshotpet.com. Grooming success begins with Best Shot in your tub, made from the best stuff on earth. Groomers, take your seats. It's time for B-Bird's Classroom. All right, tell us about color and shampoo.
So one of the things that we hear from our distributor friends is that music going to just play while I'm talking?
Is this the first time you've heard that? Well, dang, those headphones and this system works much better than Zoom. It always does that. It fades out underneath you. It's faded out now. Oh, my God. This is funny. Okay, carry on.
I kind of forget where I was. The question is, what does it mean when the color of a shampoo has changed since the last purchase? So in order to take a deep look or even an accurate look at color, we need to distinguish between having a different color and discoloration.
Right. They're two different things.
Two different things. Discoloration is when a color is, quote, off, unquote. It just doesn't look right. It can be muddy or murky, grayish, or just plain yuck. It can happen as a product ages or if it has become contaminated. Now, excessive heat or cold during storage and transportation can also make a color weird. So that's discoloration. That's your color going off. The other issue is that you get bottles and it's definitely a different color. It's not so much going from red to blue, but it could be going from clear blue to a creamy blue, or clear blue to a very light blue. It's just the color doesn't look
like similar but not the same.
Similar but not the same. Yeah, just a little different. And you notice it because maybe you still have a little bit of the last gallon sitting on the shelf and say, well, look at this. It's not nearly as blue as I expected. So that's a change of the color, not a change in the color, right? But what happens is that groomers just notice that the color has changed and they jump to the worst case scenario. This is because of what happened with iGroom, the tip of the iceberg, who, due to the pandemic and their very serious problems in, with the supply chain, they had to change some of their suppliers of ingredients. So a change of supplier of ingredients, it's going to make a just a very minor change in the ingredient itself. Not all sodium laurosulfate from five different manufacturers is going to be exactly the same.
It's like when you go to the pharmacy and they've bought from a different company, the pills could be a different color.
Yeah, it's kind of like that. It is. It's exactly like that. And sometimes they want to duplicate color, and sometimes not so much. They want to appear really different. And sometimes it can't be controlled by the original manufacturer. It's because they can't get exactly the same source supply of that ingredient or its components.
But that can be alarming when happens because you wonder what's
going
on. Because
now we don't have that trust, because our trust has been broken by all of this.
Stop clapping, you're spiking everything.
Spike that, bitch.
I'm sure you're flipping me off, but I can't see it. You're going to kill my editing. Barbara is so enthusiastic. She is clapping her hands, and that's why that audio that you just heard sounds a bit funny.
Well, I got to do something. I can't just sit here and lecture.
How do we get the trust back with our vendors and producers and all that stuff?
I have been giving a lot of thought to that because I think it's kind of an urgent need because all that happens is that we just kind of keep stirring the pot of distrust, and to know that where is the line between not trusting or not being critical.
Right.
The line between blind trust and no trust. How can we shift? How can we shift into a little bit more trust? Because we've lost a lot of trust. And we've been told that when a product spoils, it can change the color.
Yeah, they should remember that and let us know in advance, or at least make a label that has a sticker on it that says new look.
Well, you know, the whole labeling thing, I really had an extended conversation with Jennifer Lee about their experiences during the pandemic. And the whole labeling thing is another layer of challenge for the manufacturer, because you buy labels by the thousands.
If you're changing your chemical suppliers because of the pandemic and you can't get the same stuff, you can't very well reprint all your labels just for one run of shampoo or one order of ingredients.
That's right. And things became so shifting during the pandemic that what happened was that iGroom started being less specific in their identification of ingredients. And that seemed less trustworthy.
I think one of the neatest things is many of the companies are now disclosing their ingredients. That's a first step.
It is a first step. And I think that the Groom Pod could make a difference by helping groomers get acquainted with the people in the industry that we know or want to know.
I think that's a great idea.
Not to have people come on and just market their products, but have people come in and tell us about their experiences as a distributor, as a manufacturer, as a trade show vendor.
The challenges they might face that we don't even think about.
Right. Just to give groomers a broader perspective, because that's what's happened to my own perspective of the industry. The more I get to meet different people and get to know their little, how they got into the industry and blah, 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 and what they face, the challenges they face in their particular end of the little piece of the game, the more broader perspective I have of the industry as a whole and what's to be criticized and what's to be trusted. Does that make sense? Susie, I think that you and I could play an important role in reestablishing some trust between the end user, groomers, and the people who are supplying the products.
If this is something that interests you guys, let us know on the discussion group, and we will seek out some of these vendors and distributors and see what we can learn from them. How's that?
Yeah, sounds good to me. So I just want to name some of the reasons, some of the factors that could create a noticeable color change. So it's true that ingredient change within the formula can make a big difference. But also just a different supplier of an ingredient can cause the color to come out at the end a little bit differently, because each ingredient comes with its own preservative, its own carrier. You know, is it in water? Is it in alcohol? Is it in glycerin? Was it got phenoxyethanol in there as a preservative just for that one ingredient, or maybe something else? You know, there's just tiny ingredients behind the ingredients that can change and cause a color change. And of course, the addition of a new ingredient or the removal or missing ingredient can cause color change. A supplier change, I mentioned, storage conditions and excessive heat or cold, that's more likely to cause a discoloration, but it can happen. And of course, the discoloration is also from microbial contamination. There can be just a fuck up during manufacture.
It happens.
But it happens. Human or mechanical screw up. Maybe the new guy didn't put in the exact amount of colorant and it came out a lighter blue.
Yes.
Like that could happen. It's not necessarily like some toxic soup has been added to your shampoo. UV exposure, especially things in clear bottles, and oxidation.
UV meaning light?
Yeah, UV meaning light. It's always good to store things in dark cupboards.
Cool and dark is my go-to.
Cool and dark, and not necessarily under the tub.
Right.
What's the matter with under the tub? Not always very sanitary under there.
My garage sometimes isn't all that sanitary either. I've got a rack, though, so nothing is sitting on the ground.
No, I know. I used to throw things under the tub, but I grew weary later on down the line. Packaging can make a difference, especially in retail-sized products, which can change packaging components and maybe screw up the balance. And a change of the colorant itself. You know, so let's say blue number 4 wasn't available, they had to go with blue number 5. I do want to assure you that colorants, not only do they make just a pinch of what's in a gallon of shampoo, just a pinch, a tiny pinch can color 5 gallons of shampoo. No kidding. Just a pinch of colorant. But those colorants are the most regulated components of cosmetics of anything else.
Really?
Each batch of colorant has to meet exacting standards to be exactly the same. So blue number 5 is always going to be blue number 5. It's never going to be blue number 4. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. They keep a good track of that stuff.
They really do. And most of those colorants are manufactured, I think, in the United States.
And when a shampoo has changed, there's usually more than one clue, shall we say. So if you see a different color and you open it up and it smells funny, that's going to be a problem. That's something bad growing in there. But if you open it up and it smells the same and it's fairly new and it hasn't been exposed, it just might be a formula change.
Exactly.
Okay.
I don't think it's necessary for every company to put stickers on their bottles that there's a different ingredient in there. Now contains ethanol. No, there's a limit to what we should request from companies.
Right.
And just saying that the inky name that we all want ingredients to be listed as, the International Nomenclature of Cosmetic Ingredients list.
Yes.
Those inky names are generalizations. It can say like sodium lauryl sulfate, and a chemical company might have 5 versions of sodium lauryl sulfate with different ethoxylation amounts. Who knows? It's not exact. That inky name is not as exact as we might tend to think. Just saying.
Well, that's good to know.
Oh, here's another thing that I wanted to say.
Carry on.
I just wrote this. It's funny what I come up with when I write. It says, by maintaining a firm cloak of secrecy over ingredient information, groomers were forced to make choices of products based on the marketing claims and the explanations of salesmen. For the first 3 decades of my experience, the 70s, 80s, and 90s, the vast majority of groomers were women, and most salespersons were men.
It's true, you're right.
Groomers were assumed to be less educated women and gay men who didn't care or could not understand what was in the bottle or how it worked. And then I started some shit.
Oh, I bet, because that one's tweaking me right now. Okay, let's move on to the behavior game, or we're going to run out of time again, and I don't want to run out of time. I want to play this fun game. Okay, hang on. We're going to play an ad, and we'll be right back.
Shell Season has a great enzymatic cleaner called Kennel Fresh, and you dilute it with warm water, and it smells good, and then it evaporates to be a deodorant. As the Kennel Fresh dries, it's enzymatic. It eats the bacteria and the odor source. So it's really good stuff. You can use it indoors or out.
Find it at your local distributors
or showseasongrooming.com.
We want to welcome Randy and Cheryl Lowe from Precision Sharp and invite you to check out their website where you can see their newest precise cut shear called Lynx. It's a patented design featuring a thumb ring that slides the length of the handle for perfect ergonomic placement of your thumb. Slide it and lock it into position to get your best groom on. Check it out at precisionsharp.com. Let's see what's happening at the grooming table. Okay, Barbara, you had this grand idea of the behavior recognition game. So what are the rules?
Well, so the game is between you and I, and we're each going to think of three or more behaviors that show up on the grooming table. This is dogs' behaviors that are most often misinterpreted by the groomers.
Okay, why don't you start off with one?
Well, my first one would be licking.
Oh, licking, that's a good one. So people think licking is wonderful love being distributed by the pet. What do you say?
I say it can be a sign of stress and the dog trying to stop the action by distracting with this licking stuff that they know that usually stops them and they get a hug. And
it creates a reaction. That's a positive reaction instead of what's going to happen or what is currently happening.
Right. Like, stop this and do that that you do when you love me.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily I love you. It could be I want you to think that I love you.
It's like shiny object over here. Lick, 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 lick. Here, do this.
I know. And I had one doodle, dog that I really enjoyed, by the way. But this dog had a huge, long tongue. And he would literally slap me in the face with his tongue and stop me from being able to dry his head.
And the danger lies in exactly that. So visualize you're doing a front foot nail trim and your face is right down there next to the dog's face and the dog turns around and starts to lick your face. If that happens to be a precursor to a bite, your face is in a very vulnerable spot at that moment. So if you're getting your face licked, think about what the motivation is and maybe perhaps remove your face from the bite area of danger, the area of danger.
Yeah, I think that's a good suggestion, like move.
Yeah.
Move and readjust your position and relationship to the animal because it is distracting. It can cause you to make a mistake and things can go from bad to worse with the face licking and all of that. And we just assume that it means they're okay with you having your face next to their face, and they may not be. They may just be trying to make you move your face.
I got one for you.
Okay.
Pawing, especially the big dogs, when they paw at you.
Oh, good one.
Some people kind of read that as being very aggressive. It's actually a pretty clear message that says, hey, I need a break. But they're doing it in a very polite way because they could bite or growl or snarl or snap or any of those things. But instead, they're just kind of pushing you out of the way. It's also very much a dominance thing. It's a dog that wants to be dominant. So what do you do when a dog's pawing at you?
I didn't ever think about that. I usually say, stop that.
I take a look at what I'm doing that's creating the situation where the dog feels like it has to ask for a break. And oftentimes I'll just give them that break and I'll step back a little bit. I'll do something else and then I'll come back at it. And this is an area in which name and explain helps me a lot. I really do like to tell the dogs exactly what I'm doing because I think that a lot of them understand a lot of the words. And so I'll let them know that I'm coming back. Are you ready? I'll ask for permission in that way. I say ready. And then I'll pick up the foot and I'll say snip. And then I'll snip it so that the dog has a little warning. It's not so much a surprise. And oftentimes some of that pawing will stop. Okay, your turn.
You're clearly more trained than I.
Well, I'm glad my behavior dollars went to a good cause.
Another behavior that I, these are all kind of what you call polite resistance. But the thing about polite resistance is that it can become impolite if it's not honored.
Yes.
And one that I think is often misinterpreted is tail wagging.
Yeah, that can mean so many things.
It can. And it sometimes depends on the angle of the tail, how they're holding the tail, as well as that it's wagging. You need to be able to kind of determine if there's other signs of stress in the dog's body. If the dog has a stiff tail and it's wagging it, it's not the same. That can be very aggressive behavior. If the dog is lowering its tail and wagging it, it's more submissive. Am I right?
Yes, the tail is such a communication tool for the dogs. The circle wag, the happiest wag of all. If you see that circle wag when that dog comes up to greet you, you know they're pretty comfortable with you. Life is going to be okay. They're not so worried. If you see that tail clamped between the dog's legs and the back kind of even curled over so it looks like their butt is tucked in, that's a really uncomfortable dog. And this is all just through the tail. It's amazing what they can communicate. Sometimes the tail wag is another one of those learned behaviors where they think they will get a break from the tail wagging because you'll be happy about it. Some dogs are pretty tricky and will wag their tail and growl at you at the same time because it is a sign of excitement on top of everything else.
Yeah, yeah. It's just like the nervous system has been electrified a little bit,
yeah,
right?
Exactly. Exactly. So what about the dog that really, really tries to avoid you holding on to the beard? Sometimes we take that a little too personally. Like, why is the dog fighting me? I've never heard it. I just want to get the hair out from between the eyes. But the truth is, it is oftentimes painful teeth that are happening at that moment. The teeth hurt so bad and they didn't before, so you just keep doing what you're doing. Now as the dog ages and the people haven't had a dental done, the dog's mouth hurts and you're grabbing onto that nature's handle, as we used to call it, and that can be so painful. So anytime a dog fights me controlling their head, I really look for medical problems. How about you?
I hate it.
It's painful because it's usually combined with pawing.
Yeah, I usually try to find another way, but it's very hard to do a good head on a dog if you have no way of steadying the dog's head. And I much prefer to sort of put my fingers underneath and my thumb on top of the muzzle and just gently hold like that. But even then, you might have not enough room around your hands to do what you need to do around the muzzle of a dog. And then I'll go for the whiskers. And what I did learn, I know Susie's going to hate this because she doesn't believe in holding the whiskers at all, but I learned that you trim the whiskers last.
I definitely leave a handle of hair underneath. It's usually somewhere around the chin so that if I need it, I can get in there. But these days, I like to get consent from the dogs, and I know you don't think it's Jesus even possible.
No, I don't. I don't think it is possible. Not for this.
But it is.
You know, I can't. I'm going to make you groom Marco someday. God damn, if you can get permission from him to put his head in your hand. Oh, God.
Well, I'm going to take it on as a challenge someday if I can get back there while he's around. Of course, he wasn't all that happy with me last time I was in there. But in combination with using the groomer's helper and a cross-tie situation and then not actually doing any trimming, but letting them put their face in their hands and using name and explain again, letting them know what I'm doing. Sometimes the type of shear matters. Sometimes I'll go in with really long shears and have no problem. But if I go in with short shears where my hand is in view of the eyes, then it creates a different kind of a situation. Also, I find with the Shih Tzus, which I do a lot of because drop coats are really my best kind of haircut, that sometimes their wrinkles are high and people will accidentally go in there either with the blenders or even with straight shears and just kind of gently nip off a little bit of the top of their wrinkle. And then they're toast forever. They hate the whole face trimming thing. That's another reason they might fight you. But I always try to work with them and try to let them know what I'm doing. And I seem to have some good success. I don't have anybody who really fights me anymore with the face, just maybe one. And I will grab a little bit of hair if there's no teeth problem. But I always try to get a peek at those teeth, because if the teeth hurt, we're going a different route altogether. I'll just try to do it without holding the head still or something. Make it work. All right. How about
sitting down?
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah. What do you think about sitting down? Is it avoidance or is it something else?
Well, it can be avoidance. And there again, it can be a way of kind of trying to shut down the action. But it can also be discomfort of standing on the grooming table. Now, does that mean that you should groom your dog lying down on the couch?
Yeah, I might like that.
Well, I do that a little bit. I do that a little bit with my Maltese. I'm sitting on the futon and they're laying on it beside me. And I might say, oh, let's do just a little bit of face trimming. And I'll take care of that. And here's an interesting thing about Marco the Maltese. He hates to have his eye boogies removed.
Nah, I wonder why.
Just the least little bit of boy. But he lets me open his eyelid and put a dry eye drops in there.
That's crazy.
It soothes him. The reason I can tell is that he starts licking his lips after I put a drop in his eye. That just means, ooh.
A little tension release. All right, I got one that gets misread, and it's not exactly on the table, but it's in the bathtub. When you're washing a dog, and it's a dog that is of a certain age, shall we say, and the dog starts falling over, and you think, oh, that dog is so relaxed, it wants to take a nap. That's not what's going on, though.
No.
No, that dog's getting too hot. You need to turn your water temperature down. I think that dogs actually appreciate a little bit cooler water than humans do.
Oh, I agree.
Yeah.
I agree with that, but not seriously cooler. It can be not warm enough, too. And sometimes if there's a greasy, seborrheic situation, an oily skin or coat, cool water ain't gonna cut it.
Not your friend.
Not your friend. You're not gonna be able to get that dog clean with just cold water. But I think you're right. I think that there's a difference in temperature tolerance between humans and canines that should be noticed.
Yeah, and I think that oftentimes when dogs get bathed at home, their humans use too warm a water, and then the dogs really become uncomfortable with bathing. And we don't want that, because that does not help us do our jobs at all. All right, I'm going to do one more.
Okay.
So this is the last one, and this gets misread quite a bit. This is a behavior that happens when you push a dog too far. And it's a complete shutdown of the dog while they're on your table. So you think, wow, this dog has given up the fight. This is not a good thing. This is a bad thing. This is a dog checking out of the situation, and they are not going to learn anything, and they're not going to make your job very easy, and you are going to create a fear of grooming if the dog shuts down and you just forge through. You got to get them back paying attention. Sometimes I'll sing a little bit. I always take a break when I see a dog shut down like this. I try to figure out what's causing them to shut down. It's not, gee, I'm going to be cooperative. This is, I am so afraid of what's going on that I'm retracting inside myself. So watch for that when you're dealing with behavior cases.
Cats do that, but I like it. I like it when a cat turns into a loaf of bread on my table.
I agree. It's definitely productive for the grooming process, but not so much if you're working with a behavior dog, because it's not moving forward. It's actually, they're so afraid that of the process that you're probably creating PTSD, some serious damage, if you just forge ahead with a dog that's completely shut down like that. Well, is there anything else you'd like to bring up?
If there is, I can't think of it.
Well, I can only think of one more thing, and that is dogs that really hate the dryer on their face or on their body. They're not just being naughty.
No, I agree totally. In fact, a lot of things, they're not just being willfully naughty. There's a reason behind all of these undesirable behaviors. And we need to think of, what else could it be?
What is the dog getting out of it? Yeah, what could possibly be driving the motivation for this behavior?
What are they trying to say to me?
Yep.
So this game was, I kind of thought of it after I read an article about a police dog that found a missing toddler deep, deep, deep in the woods. And the handler was saying how much he had to just let the dog do its thing and learn how to read the dog so that he could tell what the dog needed to continue forward with the mission. And I thought, if we could only better read the dog on our table to keep moving forward towards the destination of finishing the fucking groom.
See, for me, it's not always about finishing the groom. There's a big part of it about making the next 15 years of grooming better for that pet. That's a huge focus for me.
Yeah, and if you can explain that to the people, you're in good shape.
I totally agree. Okay, guys, thanks for being here. Stay tuned for lots more fun coming up in the future as Barbara makes her adventure across country. And please support our sponsors, and we've got good stuff, good content coming for you guys every week, except for the week I'm going to be at the Northwest Grooming Show. Ha! Okay. Happy grooming, everybody. We'll see you next week on the Groom Pod. Bye-bye now.
We're counting on you to take care of yourselves. See you next week.